to the other person. You don't know if they're brother and sister. You don't know why they're sitting on the floor like that. You don't know what to do when you walk into somebody's house, or if they have a house. Maybe they, you know, maybe they move all the time or something. And but through all these cultural barriers, what I really found was that what you need to do is you open your heart. You say, "I have no idea what I'm doing." You say, "God, I'm humble. I'm willing to do what you want." Just the way Christ humbled himself in obedience to death, even death on a cross, and make yourself available that way. The thing that I was most impressed with, specifically with where I went, was with the fact that Wycliffe Bible Translators, there has a mission to translate the gospel. There are a lot of reasons you can go overseas. You can go overseas to heal people's bodies, which I'm pre-med, so I understand that really well. That's something that I have a passion for. That's something that I long to do for people. But when you go overseas hoping to translate the gospel, what you give is somebody, you give them an incredible gift, something that they've never had an inkling existed before. In Peru, I ran into people that believed that there were mountain spirits, evil spirits, just like in the Old Testament where they'd build altars to the gods in the high places. They did that in Peru, in the mountains, and the descendants of the Incas, which is the people that I was with. One time in the jungle, this missionary had a woman come to her who had twins. And in their people group, what they did was anytime anyone had twins or triplets or more than one child at once, it was considered a litter. And litters were only for animals. So they would kill any child that one of the two twins, because they didn't think that the mother could sustain more than one child at once, or for whatever reason, they thought that it wasn't human. So one time this woman came to the missionary named Harriet, and she asked Harriet, she said, "What should I do? What should I do with this child? I have a feeling that your God doesn't want me to kill this child, that there's something important about life." And Harriet said, "You need to go ask God. You need to go talk to God about this." And she wouldn't tell her an answer. She wouldn't give her the answer from her own lips. She said, "Go ask God." And Harriet said that she was so afraid the woman would come back having killed her child. But she didn't. And I was upset by that because, not that she didn't kill her child, but I was upset that, she had given the woman such freedom of choice. Because, you know, why wouldn't you take that opportunity to tell her what's right and, you know, encourage her and even watch her to make sure she did what was right? And so she had me thinking about why did you come as a missionary? If a woman or a man, anybody down there came up there and asked you, you know, "You came to make peace between these two villages that are warring, right? That's why you came, right? Just like the Jews asked Jesus when he came. That's why you came." What would you say? "No, I didn't even know these villages were warring. I had no idea. I came to share the gospel. That's why I came." And so when you see that woman coming to ask you about what she should do with her twins, are you there to be telling her about that, or are you there to point her to God? And then that's why you're there. You are there to point her to God. And it's hard to separate that line. But there are times when that line has been crossed. For instance, this one man I know, well, I heard about, I didn't meet him, but he had more than one wife. And he said, "I have more than one wife," to this missionary, "and I don't think that your God probably likes that. What should I do about it?" And the missionary gave him some verses to show exactly what God probably liked about that and so on. And the man thought about it and went away. He came back the next day and he said, "Okay, I killed 9 of them. There's only one left. Am I holy now?" So that's, you know, the point is, you're there to share the gospel, and sometimes this is going to take a lot longer than you think you want it to take. The point is that you want to share Jesus. You want to share the gospel. And you don't understand these people. And you can't reach them by the law. But you can reach them by grace. So, I think that's all.
Next is Robin Greenwood. She's a junior in nursing, and she went to Utah.
Lower it for me. I didn't go overseas this summer, but I did go to a very important battlefield here on earth for Jesus. We went to Salt Lake City, and it was a short trip, but we packed a lot into each day that we were there. One of the things that I learned most, just the power of God's army whenever he brings us all together. There was over 500 of us in that little bitty town, or big city, whatever. It's not a real big city, but in Salt Lake City. We stayed right outside of Salt Lake City. And just the power that he had there. Every morning, we had to get up and send these 500 people out to somewhere in Salt Lake City, and we had 12 buses. And so transportation was a really big deal, and each morning he provided, each evening he provided to bring us all back together so that we could come and get together, and we were his army. And we were coming back in to get refueled for the next day to maybe mend our wounds from battle, maybe by getting a door shut in our face, just by trying to talk to somebody. The Mormon culture isn't really open to Christianity. And so one thing that while we were there that I experienced that I'd heard a lot about of, but I didn't know a lot about, was spiritual warfare. And I'd always heard this term, but I never really have experienced here in Oklahoma because it's the Bible Belt and everybody's open to Christianity. But we went out there and we had doors closed in our faces. And just the one thing that really spoke was the weather. We had people going out door to door, and he just brought showers one day. And we're like, God, just help us to go out, help us to keep dry, help us to keep going to spread your word. And I don't know how much you know about the Mormon church, but a bishop is about as high up in the Mormon church as you can get. And it takes a lot to get there. And this one day when it was raining, I don't know how discouraged you can get by going door to door in the rain and trying to share this with people. And we had this one group that came to this door and knocked on the door, didn't get an answer. So they were trying to get their stuff, you know, handed out and stuff. And so they just can go on to the next house. And they turned around and were walking down the path, and just out from behind, from their back, they felt a touch. And he goes, I want to talk with you. And the guy turned around and began to share what he believed about Christ. And it just spoke to this guy's heart. And he goes, he was one of them that knew that we were coming. And he had been taught, they'd had seminars to teach these people how to deal with us. And how to spread their word through us and to keep us from doing our job, what we were sent there to do. And he just accepted Christ right there in the middle of the pouring rain. And they had to keep this guy out of the church and keep it quiet about his decision so that maybe he could have an impact on his church and the people that were in his church. And so while I was there, God just really gave me a heart for the Mormon people, because just like us, we're grown up in a culture that teaches us and we hear about it, and that's what they're doing. They're being brought up in a Mormon home, and that's what they're taught. And so they're just going out, and it just really gave me a heart to know that, you know, they're a lost people, and they're good people, but they're a lost people. And just, they're here in our communities, and they're around us. And what do? We say, no thanks, and just, you know, shut the door, and, you know, they're there, and that's a witnessing opportunity for us. So I guess just out of my mission trip this summer, it was short, but I learned a lot. I learned about spiritual warfare and God's power when his people come together. He trains us, and we're his army, and he brought us together this summer, and we were able to go out and While we're there in about a week and a half, we had over 1,400 people saved that accepted Christ in their hearts. And so that's a staggering number. It's hard for me to comprehend it, and it was an awesome time. So thanks.
Next is Chris Jackson. He's a junior in science education, and he went to the Philippines.
If you're wondering what this silly looking shirt I'm wearing is, it's called a barong, and it's a Filipino dress shirt. So it's not like something out of the 70s, so I just want to let you know that. But as many of you know, I went to the Philippines this summer, and I spent 7 weeks working in Manila, and it's the capital city of the Philippines, and it was the best summer I've ever had in my entire life, and it was so great. I went over there with 9 other students from we were from all different states, and it was really great how God just brought us together because we worked really well as a team. But when I left, it was really cool because we didn't plan this out, but Wendy and I, we had the same first flight out of Oklahoma City, which was really neat because we got to fly to Dallas together and got to just share with our, you know, about our trips and just how scared we were and all that. But and once I got to Manila, I was pretty, I don't know if you've ever experienced culture shock before, but that's what I went through, like, for the first, you know, week or two. And it was pretty difficult just adjusting, and I kind of got a little homesick at times. And Manila is definitely probably the most crowded, and it was a very dirty city. And also, it's just so, I've never seen so much poverty before in my entire life. Just people just, like, living out on the streets. And just beggars on the streets and all that. And I've never had seen that before. And I just realized like how blessed we are living in the States. And my heart really broke for these people. And just the cultural things. I mean, I don't know if you've ever eaten octopus, but it's like chewing on an eraser. And it kind of tastes like it too. But when I was there, I worked in a small church, about 100 people. It's called a Living Circle Christian Fellowship. And it was in Quezon City. And the church met in like this back room of this restaurant, and they just like let us use it on Sunday mornings. And it really wasn't, you know, like anything nice like we would think is, you know, a big sanctuary or whatever to like have Sunday morning worship or whatever. But there I taught Sunday school and also led children's worship on Sunday mornings as well. And through the week I got to have an opportunity to teach a couple of Bible studies with the youth. And on Friday nights, one of the Bible studies I taught on Friday nights was with some of the neighborhood kids that lived in the neighborhood that I was living in. And that was probably the best time I had, was working with those kids on Friday nights, because most of them who came, they didn't know Jesus as their Savior. But it was just really great to see how hungry they were and how they would always show up every Friday night. And I had the awesome opportunity of leading this one girl to Christ while I was there in this Bible study. And she was 13. And it was just really awesome. Like I said, I don't know if you ever have a chance to go overseas, I would definitely recommend it, because I guarantee you that God will bless you like 10 times more for just giving up the time that, you know, or like giving up a summer to go over. And, you know, as he did me, and I highly encourage you, if you do have a summer to give to missions, it would be really great. I guarantee you would be blessed out of it. Thank you very much.
Next is Elliot Anderson. He's a senior in English, and he went to China.
Okay. Let me tell you something. There's this story in the book of Matthew, and you probably know it. The kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his servants to himself and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And at this point in the Gospel of Luke, when Jesus tells this story, the master says to his servants, "Do business until I return." And the next sentence here in Matthew, "And immediately he went on a journey." Immediately. He was gone. And you know what happens, he goes away, and the guy who has 5 talents invests it, and the guy who has 2 talents invests it, and the guy who has 1 talent sticks it in a hole in the ground. And the master comes back, and the guy who had 5, he bought something with those 5, and now he had 10. And when he bought something with those 5, he took a risk because he could have lost it all. And he could end up with nothing, but he wasn't afraid. The guy who was afraid of having nothing, he didn't buy anything. He stuck it in a hole in the ground. And when the master came back and calls him a wicked and unprofitable servant, he doesn't say to the master, "Well, you never called and told me what to buy with my talent, and you never wrote and made any suggestions," because it wasn't an excuse for him. Nobody told the guy with 5 talents what to buy. The master gave it to him and he left. That no one told the guy with 1 talent what to do wasn't an excuse for him, and he didn't use it. And it's not an excuse for any of us either. Because the master says, "Do business until I return," because his servants know the master's business. And we are servants, and what's our master's business? God says, "Look unto me and be saved, all you ends of the earth, for I am God and there is no other." And what does God want? He wants every tribe, tongue, and nation. He's pretty clear about that. This is what I learned about summer missions, okay? What God gave you before he left is your life, okay? Do not wait until God comes and stands at the foot of your bed and tells you in his big booming voice to go to Cambodia, all right? What you do is you take this next summer and you pay the price and you buy something with your life, and you might lose. You might lose something. You might hate it. You might get sick. You might die. But you might gain, and the kingdom might gain, because you might learn what it's like to be a son or a daughter of peace. And you might get to sow the seeds of peace among a people who are at enmity with God. Because you know how it ends up. It ends up, and the number of the children of Israel will be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered. And it will come to pass, in the place where it was said to them, "You are not my people," there it shall be said to them, "You are sons of the living God." So put your life into it.
Next is Indra Coleman. She's a junior in linguistics, and she went to the Czech Republic.
Okay. Like she said, I went to the Czech Republic this summer, and when I was there, I taught English at 3 camps, and first I was like, well, English, it's my native language. I'll just go teach English. This won't be hard at all. But it wasn't quite like that. First, we had to have orientation in Holland, and that was one of the hardest weeks of my entire life. And at first I was like, "Well, I don't even need to be orientated. You know, what's the big deal?" But it was a real struggle for me because that was the first place where we met our team members, and my team, consisted of a team leader, Trish, and then an older man named John, and I couldn't stand John at all. I hated somebody that bad in my life, and I didn't know how to handle it. And the whole time they're pumping unity of team, unity, unity, and I was like, I'm trying, but I don't even want to be around him, and we have to pray together, we have to spend 2 months together now in a foreign country, we have to rely on each other, we have to work together, and I don't want to see his face, I don't want to talk to him. And so I was like, well, I'll just forget about it and go on. And God was like, no, that's why you're here. And so there was this lady during orientation that was leading a lot of the sessions. And she had the Holy Spirit going right through her because God was just talking right to me. Like, she could have just been looking right at me. Nobody else could have even been there because Everything that she said was just directly related to this lesson that I had to learn. And first of all, we sang some songs right when I was dealing with this mostly. And we sang Amazing Grace. And then there's the line, "Saved a wretch like me." And so I was like, oh, well, I have a pride problem here because this guy is just as saved and just as precious and just as forgiven in God's eyes as I am. And God has forgiven me as just as much as he's forgiven John. And so I was like, okay, so what does that mean? And there's a verse that I memorized before I left in Psalms 16 that says, "As for the saints who are in the land, they are the glorious ones in whom I delight." And so when we got to the part about, you know, saints and how we were forgiven wretches, I was like, I do not delight in John, and he is not the glorious one. And so I was like, this is kind of a paradox for me. And then we sang "As the Deer," and there's a line, "You are my friend, you are my brother, even though you are a king." And and God just said, "I'm so far above you, and you are so low, yet I am your friend, and I've forgiven you, and I'm your brother, and I accept you." And so then I was like, okay, so you're trying to tell me something. And then the same lady that was doing all this stuff, she was like, okay, I think that we all need to just leave and go find a spot, a lone spot, and you need to surrender something to God. I just know that you just have things that you need to surrender to God. And I was like, everybody, she's talking to me. And I was like, sorry, you have to mess with this because I have this problem. So I went off and found a spot to pray, and just cried and cried and cried because I knew that I couldn't go on this trip until I got this settled. So then I prayed and prayed about it, and so then I didn't like just say, okay, now I love him. But I had at least a little inkling of what I needed to do, and I was crying because it was going to be such a big, hard job to change my mind and my heart about this guy, and I was just scared and all of that. And then we went back to the session, and the lady's like, now I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13. And I'm going to... Yeah, I know. Of course you are. So... So she began, you sure all know it, but I'm going to read a little bit of it just because I have some things to say about it. It starts, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains and have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but do not have love, I have nothing." And at that point, she didn't stop, but, you know, thoughts were coming in my head. I thought, I'm on this missions trip. I'm here to love and serve the people in the Czech Republic. We hadn't gone yet. We were still in Holland, but I was all prepared to just love and minister to these people. And God was like, no, you can't. That doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean jack if you come over here and give up your summer, give up your money, give up anything. It doesn't matter if you can't love, and you can't even love this Christian. You know, it should be easier for us to love the people that we know are forgiven and going to heaven and have the same destiny and are part of the same family as we do. And I couldn't even love him. And so then she went on, "Love is patient, love is kind." I was like, I know, and I just can't do that. And I can't be kind, you know. I can't be patient. I can't not get angry. I can't not keep a record of wrongs. Always protects. Right. Like, I'm going to protect them. Always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And so my heart just sank. I was like, there's no way I can do this. And then she read verse 8. Love never fails. And that hit me so hard because at that point I realized what my problem was that I was assuming that if I treat this guy like God wants me to, if I love him, if I serve him, if I'm kind, blah, 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 then all these bad things are going to happen. He's going to think this is going to happen. And I had set up assumptions of if A, then B. I can't obey God because that will make me miserable. And at that point, God said to me, Andrea, you will never be more miserable obeying than disobeying. If you obey, that's where life and peace are. If you obey, that's where joy is. And so it all came down to trust. And I'm really glad that God taught me that at the very beginning, because trust is what we need. Trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And there's one other verse that I wanted to read that kind of reedifies, if that's a word. Well, it doesn't sound familiar. Psalm 84:11. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless. And God just really taught me that if we trust him and if we do what he says, then he'll give us life and peace and joy beyond anything else that we can imagine. And there's no reason not to not trust. So that's all.
Next is Pete Jackson. He's a senior in construction science, and he went to Malawi.
Well, as she said, I spent 10 weeks this summer in Malawi. I went with a team of OU and OBU students, and the first 4 weeks we were there, we did an evangelistic outreach. And the last half, we did a real variety of things. One thing was student work on the college campus there. Another was that we worked with orphans in an orphan ministry. And then we also did some True Love Waits rallies for sexual purity. They have some real problems in Malawi. It's estimated that over 25% of the people there have AIDS. And as a result of this, there are 250,000 orphans right now, and they project there to be 850,000 orphans in 5 years. And so they really have a problem with AIDS. And so we tried to help them some with that. What I want to talk to you tonight about is what impacted me more than any other thing was a 26-year-old man named Craig Chongwe. And Adam and I, Adam was the other guy from OBU, we lived with him for a week. And that was a real experience in itself, living with a 26-year-old African bachelor. But he drove this old 4x4 pickup. And I mean, this thing was a rattle trap deluxe. Craig didn't major in beauty. He majored in speed. This guy could do potholes like no one I've ever seen. But the thing about Craig was, he worked at a tire company. He was the manager of a little tire shop. And so we went with him one night to his cell group. And at his cell group, we walked into the room and there were 10 or 12 people there. And they began introducing themselves and going around. And they would, I don't know how many of them there were that said this, but probably 6 or 7 of the people in that room said, "Hello, my name is this or that. And I work at Quick Fit. I work at Quick Fit. I work at Quick Fit." I don't know how many times I heard that. And one guy gave his testimony, and Craig had actually led him to the Lord and then made sure that he began to grow. And all of these people were being impacted by Craig. Now, I spent 10 weeks in Malawi. I could have come today and told you about the time we were in on the luggage rack of a Venture, driving through Luanda Game Park, almost getting stampeded by 75 to 80 elephants. Could have told you about the time we fed a live chicken to a lion in the zoo, which was kind of an experience. But I could have told you about the walking through the rows and rows of shacks with the sewage running down the streets, or about the little boy that walked up to me and pulled his shirt up to show a scar that ran from the top of his chest to the bottom of his stomach and then began to beg for money. But one of the main reasons I went to Malawi this summer was to meet a young man who has a secular job and is living out the Great Commission to make disciples. And he impacted me, I think, more than any other thing through the whole trip. So thank you, Craig, for allowing me to share about you. But thank you very much.
Next is Sarah Dunnigan, and she's a senior, double majoring in finance and history, and she went to Vietnam as well.
Okay, everyone else's has been like planned and pretty organized, so but mine's not, so get ready. Okay, first of all, do any of you guys know Graham Greene? Because Brandon, Jeremy, and I don't, but we heard about him the whole time we were there. There were books like all over the place, and they kept saying, do you know Graham Greene? Do you know Graham Greene? Is that his name? Graham Greene? And they're like, they wanted to sell us books all the time because we were Americans about Graham Greene, and we're like, who is that? But anyways. I went with Jeremy McLean and Brandon Clicky, and these are some really great guys, and I would encourage some of the younger guys to really try to put yourselves around them, because I think you can learn a lot from them. They're really neat, and I enjoy getting to know them more over the summer when we were there. Two funny things about them, real quick, before I start. First of all, Brandon will eat anything when when we're like, we went on this little side trip to the Mekong Delta, and they served us weird stuff. And this Buddhist guy had told us all about how if we get squeezed by a python, don't worry, because we'll die within 24 hours, and then we won't hurt anymore, and we'll come back like as a mosquito or something, so it's all good. And so we're like, yeah. And so I was like so nervous that day, and we're like around this yucky water and stuff, and in these boats that were for sure gonna sink and everything. And they served us this food, and I was for sure it was either dog or rat. And so I didn't eat any of mine. And Brandon, we're sitting at the table, and Brandon's like, "Hey, Sarah, you can eat that." And I'm like, "You can have it." So that was a fun day. But all the Vietnamese girls, they were so great. And we would, pretty much the girls kind of hung out with the girls and the guys hung out with the guys. And the girls would always ask me, they'd be like, "Does Jeremy have a girlfriend? Does Jeremy have a girlfriend?" Because his laugh is so cute. And so they all loved him because of that. So, I had a really great time in Vietnam. It was nothing like what I expected, but I loved it anyway. On the day that we arrived, which was a Sunday, we attended a youth service at Grace Baptist Church, real soon after we got there. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that about 40 to 50 students were attending this youth service. I didn't really expect the numbers to be that high. This is the only, by the way, Grace Church is the only church that's allowed by the government to exist in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh, whatever you want to call it. And that's where that we were at most of our time, and those are the students that we worked with while we were there. It started at 3:30 and it lasted until 6, and we were so tired because we'd been up about 30 hours, and I was so worried that I was going to fall asleep because the message was in Vietnamese, so of course I didn't know anything that was going on, and so I was kind of like looking through my Bible and just trying to find things to do, and Brandon was kind of like nodding off. I kind of looked over there, and then this one girl that was with us, her name is Marianne. She just like laid out in the pew and just took a nap. And I was like, "Oh no, they're gonna think we're so crazy." But we explained it to them later, and they understood. So they were really nice about it. But the really cool thing was after the message, they sang in. Man, that was the neatest thing. It was probably the sweetest sound I've ever heard. 50 Vietnamese youth singing these songs. Some of them were in Vietnamese and some of them were in English. And the cool thing was that before I left, I had read Psalms 67. And I'm going to read it to y'all real quick. I haven't memorized, but I don't want to mess up here, so I'm going to read it. May God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face shine upon us. And that your ways may be known on the earth and your salvation among all the nations. May the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you. May the peoples praise you. May the nations be glad and sing for joy. For you rule the peoples justly and guide the nations on earth. May the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you. then the land will yield its harvest, and God, our God, will bless us. God will bless us, and all the ends of the earth will fear him. And I had really been praying that I would see another nation praising God. And when I got there, just on the very first day even, I experienced that, and it was so beautiful. It was the most beautiful sound, and it's not like they rehearsed or, you know, were perfect musically, but God couldn't have given me a greater gift than to hear that right then. When I was there, we were each assigned to two students, and one of my students' names was Hong, and she is the greatest. I love her to death. She, we had a lot in common, and we just bonded, you know, right off. And it was amazing to me how many things that we did have in common, because I expected them to be so different than us, you know, because we live a world apart. But it was fun to just share our thoughts on, you know, school, just regular life things, and then also on God, because it matched up so much. One evening while we were riding on her motorcycle, which is the transportation of choice there, and I love motorcycles now, she said, Sarah, we are sisters in Christ, and if we never see one another ever again, we know that we're going to meet in heaven. And she said, I am so excited. And by her, I mean, I almost started bawling. And when she said that, God really hit me with the fact that he is the same here as he is in Vietnam or in Russia or anywhere else. And it was just neat to see God working through their lives just like he is here in our lives. And even though, I mean, everything is so different, what we think it's so different, God is doing the same thing there, and it's so awesome. Real quick, I got an email from Hong today, and when we were in Vietnam, some of us girls, I don't think any boys went, to the med school. You guys didn't go? We went and just toured around, and we met this girl while we were there. We asked her to come to karaoke with us one night, and today, Hong's email said that they had been keeping in touch with this girl, and she accepted Christ, and now Hong is discipling her. So that was so exciting. That made my whole day. And then another thing real quick. I read the biography of Hudson Taylor before I left, and one thing that God really showed me was how important it is if you're going to be on missions short-term or long-term, how important it is to take on their culture. That means eat the food that looks really bad. Like, I should have eaten that. And I know that now, what Brandon ate. And then, and dress. I mean, like, if you're going to be there a long time, forget the American clothes and just, you know, you're going to be more effective in their clothing and in their way of life. The two missionaries that are stationed, or the couple that are stationed there that we kind of worked through, they're an older couple, and they left, I mean, grandkids, which I'm sure was so hard, and their children and things to go to Vietnam. And I mean, this is supposed to be their retirement, and supposedly you're supposed to relax and stuff. They are not relaxing in Vietnam. They are working hard, and I'm sure it's so much harder as an older person to take on a different culture than it would be for me or something, but they have totally just given up their American way of life and done everything, you know, as the Vietnamese do it, and that was such, and that made an impact on me. The very last thing, if you are praying about going to summer missions this summer, pray for your parents as well. My parents, at about this time, I was like, hey, Mom, Dad, what about going to Vietnam? And they both said, no way. And so I was like, well, I don't know what to do now. You got to honor your parents and all that. But I prayed about it. Yeah. I prayed about it, and God really began to change their hearts. And this summer, after I got back from Vietnam, I went on a real quick mission trip with our youth. And my little sister and brother were on that. And we were in Trinidad, Colorado. I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but it's a really poor community and dangerous. Like, a lot of bad things happen there. And one day, they split us up into twos, and we had to go house to house and talk to people at their homes. And the youth pastor put my little brother with some other little kid that's like 13, and they were supposed to go off on their own. And I just found myself like being so protective and I thought to myself, oh, wait, this is probably how my parents felt when I said that I wanted to go to Vietnam. So just pray for your parents. It's really hard, even from a sister's view, it's really hard to let them go. So pray for your parents, and God, if that's where God wants you to be, then he'll really change your heart. Thanks.
Next is Jessica McCarter, and she went to Venezuela. She's a graduate from OU with 2 degrees, one in professional writing and one in film and video studies. And she's currently staff here at the BSU, and she's also my MT leader. So,
wow, it's really humbling to get up after all these people, because they really had some great summers and had a lot of great things to say. First of all, let me preface what I'm going to say by just mentioning that I hope what you've heard here tonight is an encouragement for you all to really think about the possibilities of how your life can impact other students overseas. I just really would encourage you, just like some of the other people that came before me would, that you'd really pray about that, really seek the Lord on it. It's really an exciting thing. It doesn't have to be scary. In fact, it's quite a joy to be able to go over with and share Christ with other students. And so with that in mind, I went to Mérida, Venezuela. I was going to ramble off a whole lot of this in Spanish, but I realized most of you probably have better Spanish than I do. And I went with Focus International along with 5 other people, and we joined up with the journeyman who had already been there for a year, and a friend of his that had come to help him for the summer as well. And all we had 8 on our team, and it was a very diverse group and very struggle filled, as you might imagine, with 8 people. Our job description was twofold. One, we were to work alongside La Primera Iglesia Bautista de Mérida, which is the First Baptist Church of Mérida, and the college students there. We were to help them in the area of discipleship, and we were to help them in gaining a vision for reaching students on their own campus. They have their campus there is probably a little bit bigger than OU. I mean, it's about 25 to 30,000 students, so I don't know how big OU is now, but it's a pretty big campus. And then also, our job description was to reach the students at the university. And that the university is called La Universidad de los Andes. And so we were to work with them and try to reach them for Christ. One of the reasons why I went was to see what was happening in the lives of students somewhere else in this world. I really wanted to see what God was doing somewhere outside of Norman, Oklahoma. And also to really allow God to shape my heart as to a vision for the world. Before I left, I really didn't feel like I had one. A lot of my friends, as I went through school, I really saw God excite their heart for that. And I really just didn't see that happening with me. But as I'm committed to working with students, I really wanted to be able to encourage students to do the same and to see what he would do in my heart. So what he taught me, I was looking today as I was kind of going over what I was going to say, and I was looking at this picture that was on my desk, and most of you probably can't see it from here, but it's a real fun picture in a real fun frame. And you can tell that. I love fun stuff. And this picture is a picture of our group. And in the background is the Andes Mountains, and there's snow on the peaks. And this day was a really special day because it was a day when all 5 peaks in Mérida had snow on them. And the highest peak, Pico Bolivar, is in Venezuela, in Mérida. And then they also have 5 total peaks. So it was a really neat day. Everybody, the whole town was talking about the snow on the peaks, and it made the weather really cool and everything like that. So we just spent quite a lot of time with the people from the church outside talking about the snow and the peaks. So it was a really special night. But as I was looking at this today and thinking about it, I was looking at the mountains and just thinking about a verse that that the Lord had given me pretty early on in our stay there. And it was a psalm that I was praying through as I walked back from our Spanish classes that day. And it was in Psalm 125, 1 and 2. It says, "Those who trust in the Lord are as Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds His people from this time forth and forever." And I remember thinking that day, what an incredible, I mean, how incredible it is to wake up every morning and the mountains be out here and it be such a picture of God and His character. He totally and completely reveals Himself in His creation to us. And that verse just reminded me of that. And I just wanted to weep for these people. And just because here they are surrounded by the Lord and His mountain. And He's in His Word. It cannot be moved. And that really, it really touched me. And I think that was the very first moment where my heart really broke for those people. And I really began to open up my heart and heart to them, to love them. And so that was really incredible to me. Just an interesting tidbit. I thought this was really fascinating. I didn't know this. But when we got down there, we learned that only 2% of Venezuelans are Christians. Most of them are stuck in a religion that that really... that they have, it's a religion to them, it's not a relationship. And so they're very deceived as to that. If you ask them what they, about their religion, they'd tell you that, but they'd say, "I'm also into metaphysics or these other things." And so that was really incredible to me to think that only 2% were Christians. And also while we were there, we heard that, there was an effort from coming from the government to really, to keep, there are some tribes still in Venezuela that have not been, their language has not been translated into the gospel. And there was a movement that we heard of while we were going, while we were there, that the government was trying to keep, just or otherwise, out of these tribes to preserve them for tourism, to keep them preserved from Western civilization. And so that, I mean, that blew me away. And if you know anything about the 1040 window, Venezuela is not in that. So that really, I mean, that opened my eyes. It was incredible because I thought, man, I mean, the Lord is really at work in our hearts to have us reach a world and not just a window of people. There are still people out there who do not know Christ. So that really touched my heart. Secondly, getting back to this picture here, another thing that I really see when I look at this picture is that it's a group of people that was constantly surrounded by the Lord. One thing that God really taught me was about the body of Christ. And when I look at this picture, I really see that. I see how necessary each member is in the body. One of the guys, we had a really diverse team, like I said, and one of the guys really had a gift of and a heart for evangelism, and that really challenged me, but at the same time, it was a real struggle for me. He was always sharing, and it came really naturally to him. I mean, anybody he talked to, he could turn to sharing the gospel, and I mean, he did this Spanglish thing where it was half in English and half in Spanish, and but he was able to really communicate and get to their heart. And I really saw just how, I mean, God had gifted him with something divine. But at the same time, here I am, I'm supposed to be, you know, reaching these students, and it was hard, it was a struggle. And so I really battled with that, with my fear and just not feeling like I was quite up to par. And we had three guys come to Christ while we were there, and one guy in particular was very special to me and to all of our group. His name was Juan Carlos, and he spoke English really well. I think he had spent some time in the States, but he really had a great understanding for it. And we met him kind of halfway through the trip, and he would come up with everything. I mean, he just had really thought God out of the picture. I mean, he when we, every time we talked to him, he'd bring up atheist beliefs or this and that. I mean, it was just, it was a real struggle sometimes to be around Juan Carlos, and he kept saying he didn't want to become a Christian. And I just wanted to go up to him and say, okay, Juan Carlos, if you don't want to be a Christian, don't come around us, because you're going to become a Christian. I didn't understand that, why this guy would keep coming. And he did. He wanted to be around us all the time. And at some point, each one of us on our team, as he got to know us and spent time with us, at some point, each one of us on that team had shared the gospel with him in some way, shape, or form. And the whole time I'm thinking, man, is this guy ever going to get it? And the week right before we left, on a Sunday night, actually a Sunday at lunch, we were all talking, and this guy who had a really good gift for evangelism said, you know, I really believe that Juan Carlos is going to become a Christian tonight. And I'm just looking at him like, yeah, right. And but he did. He became a Christian that night. And as they talked to him, they were really concerned about him really understanding it. And he had, when they talked to him, he repeated back everything he had heard from every, he'd say, oh, so-and-so told me this, and so-and-so told me this, and so-and-so told me this. I mean, the guys, when they were talking to him, had never had somebody so completely understand the gospel and so much want to be a part of that than Juan Carlos. And one thing he told them, he said, I really see that you guys are brothers and sisters. I mean, this is a backup, but everybody we came into contact thought we had known each other forever. And here we would nitpick each other and be fighting and everything, and yet these people would really see us and see us try to share Christ with them. So they really got a good picture of, you know, transparency and everything. But Juan Carlos said, I really see that that you all are brothers and sisters, and I really want to be a part of your family. And that touched me so much, that that somebody would want to be a part of that family. So I really saw just how essential the body of Christ is and how we are all members of that. Real quickly, another thing I see when I look at this picture is that it really renews my vision, because I understand how the body needs me to operate. I mean, I even got to share with Juan Carlos. I got to reap some of that joy of being able to share the gospel with him. So I really got to see how I fit into the body, and it needs me. It values me. It needs me to operate in the way my personality is, my gifting. It needs me. The Lord needs me, and the body needs me. And it needs me no matter how fearful I am or I stammer over my words and mess up. I mean, the Lord can really use that. And it also really renews my vision as I work in ministry here at the BSU, because I know that as a staff, we are each concerned about creating an atmosphere where when a student comes through these doors, they would be deeply rooted in Christ, and would in turn be able to go and reach a world for Christ. And that really energizes me to think that each person on this staff has such a different angle and such a different gifting, that we're all committed to reaching students, but at the same time, we need each person to really operate in the body. We need them to operate in what the Lord has gifted them in. So that really challenges me. So that's all I really have to say about my summer. It was a great summer. There are more people that went overseas this summer than got up here and spoke tonight. My hope is that you would really seek them out, and as you really align your heart with what the Lord would have you to do for this summer, that you really would get with them and ask them about their summer, what God taught them, the struggles, the joys, that you might really be able to weigh that decision before the Lord to go overseas.